Rolling a little early. Chairman Danels is out of pocket this morning, so I will stand in his stead as chair of the board for September 21st, 2022. Good morning. Welcome, and we will get started. Mr. Director, I'll turn it over to you for any announcements or report. I'm sorry. Having called this meeting to order, we'll get started with the pledge, and Mr. Cook has graciously agreed to do that for me. Thank you.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Mr. Chairman,
I'll go ahead and do a roll call. Detective Cook is in the room. Commander Figueroa is in the room. Mr. Johnson's in the room. Ms. Kelly's in the room. Detective Crazier, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Director Porfiri's in the room. Professor Robinson's in the room. Sheriff Schuster, we heard you earlier. Can you hear us now?
I can hear you now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Chief Vasquez is in the room. Ms. Weiss, we can see you. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Good
Thank
morning.
You.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right. Very good. Any comments from the board before we get started with the director's report? All right, hearing none. Mr. Director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make my announcements pretty brief this morning. Mark Harris will be your IA. He'll be appearing virtually. You can see him on your screen now. He'll be your IA for the Madison case, and then Mark Brachtel will be your IA for the remaining cases because there's no conflict there. And then, like I said, Mark Harris is appearing virtually. Mark, just confirming, we can see you. Can you hear us?
I can, yes.
Good morning, sir. Thank you for being here. And the only other thing I'd like you to update on your agenda, if you could, is Michelle Blanco is unable to attend today. So Darcy Nichols is going to handle final action case 2022-062, the Armenta case. And then Michelle's second case that was scheduled is a new case for Rodriguez, 2022-043. We're going to go ahead and pull that from this month's agenda, and you'll see it on a subsequent agenda.
What was the number of that one again?
That's 2022-043. Last name Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to go right into the director's report, unless
Please.
There's any questions. Just a couple things I want to highlight for you. Lori Waite and her team hosted a meeting not too long ago referenced active shooter training, looking to incorporate that into our basic academy curriculum. Obviously, agencies are training on it and teaching on it at advanced officer level, but we wanted to make sure that officers are getting it at a basic level in the academy. So Lori and her team have pulled together a statewide collective of experts, and they're currently working through the curriculum for that. So I'll keep you updated as that goes on. But I sat through one of the meetings. It was a really good discussion, a lot of good points, and we just want to make sure that Arizona law enforcement right out of the academy is prepared for that day, when they have to respond to an active shooter. So again, I applaud Lori and the basic training team for that endeavor. A couple other things. Dan Wilson, your chief technology officer, and his team are working around the clock. They just pushed out another update to our internal system that interfaces with all 159 agencies in the state. So we made a lot of changes to that. We're just making the information more secure and easier to extract when information is needed to be pulled from that system, making it easier for the agencies to use as well. But I've talked about it before is our training logs. That's our next project. So Dan and his team are working on creating a system where agencies every year will be able to in real time enter their training data for all of their officers. Actually, the officers themselves, it's kind of exciting, will be able to do it, approved by their training coordinators and then uploaded to our system, and it'll track it in real time what every officer in the state of Arizona has done for that year in training. As you know now, we do everything 1 year in the past, and this will be a real time. So at the end of the year, hopefully in calendar year 2023, on January 1st of 2024, we'll be able to tell you right then, we'll be able to tell every agency head what, if any, of their officers have not met their minimum training requirements for the year. So it's a big lift. It's a big technology advancement. It's something that we've been pushing for a while now, but now Dan and his team are in a place with the other updates they've made to be able to really focus their efforts on that. So we're pretty excited about that, and I'll keep you updated as that goes along. But just to put in the back of your mind, for those of you who were law enforcement or still are law enforcement, you'll be getting information on claiming your Arizona Post account. You'll be able to go in there and claim your account through some levels of security, and then you'll have access to your training records. You'll have access to your certification record. You'll be able to control your Arizona Post account. So we're pretty excited about that. For people who are hiring on now and creating that personal history form online, they have to create a myarizonapost.gov account, and now we're going to go on the back end and catch all existing officers to create that account and give them the ability to control that. Again, it's a huge paradigm shift. It's a big technology shift, and we're pretty excited about it. And again, we're hoping, knock on wood, the kickoff would be in January of 2023. But again, as you know, with everything, you plan for the best, and you never know what happens. But I'll keep you updated as we move through that process and give you progress reports as we move toward the end of the year. A couple other things, rulemaking update. As you know, you approved us to move forward on that secondary rulemaking update that will change the way we look at instructors and the way we classify training records moving forward. We have a study session next week with the governor's review council on the 27th virtually, and then the following week, I believe, we have the final meeting. If they approve that, it'll go into effect. There'll be some time delays, so I'll be pushing something out to agency heads on those big changes, because again, those are very significant changes on the way Arizona Post collects information related to advanced officer training. A couple other things, just always like to know, let you know what I take part in on your behalf. I'm part of the statewide child fatality review program. We had a meeting last week. We're finalizing that report that will eventually go to the governor. And again, it all centers around child fatalities reviews and ways to reduce the number of child fatalities in the state of Arizona. A couple other things I've told you before, but we get together every Tuesday morning and discuss cases with myself, Ben Henry, our two attorneys, and then Mike Giamarino and Sean Donegan, our compliance managers, and we discuss these cases. Well, we had a discussion a couple weeks ago, and came out of that is providing resources to officers going that are under Arizona Post investigation. It can be very stressful. And if they're currently employed with their agency, they have access to EAPs, the Bulletproof app through the 100 Club, through their agency's portal. But what we realize is a lot of our cases involve officers who have separated employment from their agencies, and we just felt like they were maybe put out on an island and they didn't have those resources available to them. So we reached out to the 100 Club, and they graciously agreed to give Arizona Post a Bulletproof application identification code. So now we're changing the way we communicate with officers when they're under investigation and we've opened the case. We're, in addition to their information about the case being opened and how the process works, we're including that Bulletproof application that they can log on and seek any kind of mental health resources they might need as they go through this process. Because we recognize that some officers go through that process and never come back to law enforcement, but we want them to be healthy mentally, but also the officers that do come back eventually to law enforcement want them to be mentally healthy as well. So again, we are really excited that the 100 Club was willing to partner with us and allow us to start pushing out that information on behalf of the board. A couple other things. I've told you over the last 2 years I've been engaged with the RAND Corporation out of California on behalf of IADALIST and IACP, working on youth engagement, and they've been looking at ways to engage the youth in our communities, looking forward to making the law enforcement profession appetizing to them. How would we engage them at a younger level to possibly pursue a career in law enforcement? So we finally concluded last week, we had our final meeting. They put the final touches on the program. The next month or two, they'll be pushing that out nationally. And I told them on behalf of Arizona Post, I'd push it out to all the agencies in the state of Arizona as a best practices on how to engage the youth in your community. And again, just like when I was with Phoenix PD, and you had an Explorer program or a cadet program, you never expect 100% of your cadets to become peace officers. Would that be ideal? Absolutely. But if nothing else, you're creating engaged members of your community who will go out and represent the community and be engaged in the process of the community as a whole. So I'm pretty excited about that program. It took 2 years, basically, a lot of research, a lot of reaching out to different programs, finding what's going on, what's working around the country. But again, I'm excited to say it's concluded, and in about the next month or so, we'll be pushing that out nationally. And I'll push out a copy of it to all the board members for your perusal, and we'll put it on our website as well. And then finally, I always like to tell you when I go out and attend meetings, I attended in the last couple weeks, I attended the PANT meeting. That's the Yavapai County meeting where all the Yavapai County, the sheriff, and all the local jurisdictions get together and discuss issues related to their academy as well as policing trends in their community. Again, I'm usually just a fly on the wall. I sit in the back. I do give them an update on what's going on here at Arizona Post, but it really helps me understand the issues they're facing, and I can bring it back to the team here, and we can spitball ideas on how if we can help them overcome some of the challenges they're experiencing. And with that, I'll end my executive director's report, but as always, happy to take any questions anyone might have.
Any questions from the board? Mr. Director, just want to express to you my appreciation for, first, the compassion with regards to being consciously aware of the impact of the post-board investigation on an officer and to take the efforts of you and your team to do that. I'd be remiss without acknowledging you and your team for that. There's officers out there that probably don't even know at this point what that will mean to them when they find themselves subject of scrutiny, irrespective of the outcome. So thank you for doing that. And lastly, I'll take it as fair warning for the automation of the training to everybody who needs to get updated on their training.
We're making it very easy. You know, it's the 12 hours of any kind of training in a calendar year. We joke about it. We have more than 12 hours of video training on our website alone. So it should not be a heavy burden. And again, I would tell you most officers in the state are getting more than 12 hours, substantially more than 12 hours. We just want to make sure that we're auditing everybody. We're treating everyone the same because, again, larger agencies, we've always done a sampling of training records. Now everyone's training record will be audited every year, and it'll be in real time, which is, again, helpful for us, but also incredibly helpful, I think, to police agencies to understand who might be falling short on the required training. Because, again, I've never spoken to a chief or a sheriff who says their people are overtrained. I've never had that discussion. So we are excited about the technology.
Me too. Thank you. All right. Moving on to our consent agenda. I understand Mr. Johnson is recusing himself from this particular consent agenda, but if the board members have had opportunity to review the consent agenda, I will call for a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move to accept the consent agenda.
Second.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson, I'll second the motion.
All right. I have a motion to accept the consent agenda with a second. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Hearing no nays, appears the ayes have it, and so moved. Okay. The next item on the agenda is Academy Certification for Coconino Community College High Country Training Academy. Mr. Director.
And Mr. Chairman and members of the board, this is exciting times for us. I think I've told you the last couple months we've been inundated with requests from around the state to open regional academies. And Lori and her team do a phenomenal job working with these different groups that want to start these academies. As you know, a couple meetings ago, and actually, when does Glendale, they already started, or they're starting? So Glendale, the West Valley opens next week. So that's exciting. But now I can tell you, we have another one. So High Country, through a cooperation agreement with the Coconino County Community College, it wants to open the High Country Training Academy. Lori and her team did all the on-site inspections. Lori and her team said they were very impressed. It was record time. We always tell people, hey, it's a big lift. It's a heavy lift. It's going to take time. When they originally told Lori their timeline, Lori's like, we'll help you as much as we can. We don't think that's possible. Well, we now have to eat those words because it was possible. And I think you got a couple representatives, one from the college, two from the Flagstaff Police Department, that were instrumental in making that happen. They met every deadline. They met every requirement. Lori and her team went up there, did all the inspections. Now it's really just coming back for you based on what you see from them as well as what you see from Lori and her team that we're requesting that you approve them to become a fully certified Arizona Post Academy to offer basic academy instruction to peace officers in the state. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I don't know if you want to hear from someone from High Country or not, but again, we're very impressed. We're very excited about this partnership, and I think it's going to be really a really big benefit to peace officers and the law enforcement community in Northern Arizona.
Outstanding. Any questions from the board? having read the report associated with the standards and compliance requirements from the AZ Post representative, as well as the letter submitted by the provost, the college, it appears like it will be an exceptional academy to attend. And with that, I will take a motion from the board if there are no further questions.
Mr. Chair, it's Lisa.
Yes, Lisa.
I move that the Coconino Community College High County Training Academy meets all of the requirements of R13-4-114 and R13-4-116, and the academy may provide the basic training required to receive certified peace officer status.
Thank you. I have a motion from Ms. Weiss. Do I hear a second?
Mr. Chairman, Chief Voskis, I second.
Thank you, Chief. Have a motion been made? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Thank you, Chair. All those opposed, nay. Appears the ayes have it, and the motion is passed. Congratulations on your new academy. Next on the agenda is we're going to move to executive session to discuss.
To get a legal opinion on dishonesty cases. We would need a motion to do that.
All right. Having said that, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we convene into executive session to discuss dishonesty.
Thank you, Chief. A second.
Matt Figueroa, second.
Chair Schuster, second.
Matt, thank you. Having a motion on the table, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. So moved, we will move to executive session. Thank you. Having completed our executive session and being sufficiently counseled by our lawyers, we are reconvening in regular session. Next up on the agenda are final action cases. 2022-091 Douglas A. Matson consent agreement being presented by Mr. Brackett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. In this consent agreement, Post staff and Mr. Matheson propose a 12-month suspension. As reflected in the consent agreement, Mr. Matheson was stopped and was arrested for committing extreme DUI. His BAC was 0.207, and he pled guilty to a misdemeanor extreme DUI. The attached consent agreement reflects this information, but there is a typographical change needed in paragraph 2 on page number 1. The date of Mr. Madison's arrest was May 12, 2021, and not May 12, 2022. With that change being said, the parties agree that Mr. Madison's actions are in violation of Post rules, specifically Rule 109A8 and A12. The parties propose that the board impose a 12-month suspension beginning on March 17, 2022 and ending on March 17, 2023. Mr. Madison is not present. However, we have the consent agreement as stated. Are there any questions of me?
Hearing none, I will entertain a motion on the consent agreement presented by Mr. Brackett on this case.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to accept the proposed consent agreement for a 12-month suspension of Mr. Madison's peace officer certification beginning March 17th, 2022 and ending March 17th, 2023.
Thank you, Professor. Having a motion on the table to accept the consent agreement, do I have a second?
Matt Figueroa, second.
Second, we will move it to a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, signify by saying nay.
Bless you.
Bless you. Appears the ayes have it, and so moved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, just a reminder that Mark Harris will be signing off. I think he's got another obligation, and Mark Brackett will be your IA for the remaining final action cases.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
All right, moving on to final action number 2022062, the Casa Armenta, presented by Ms. Nichols.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Good morning.
I'm Darcy Nichols, one of your compliance specialists, and this morning I'll be presenting on behalf of Michelle Blanco. The board voted to initiate proceedings concerning Gila River lease recruit, Casa Armenta, on June 15, 2022. A complaint notice was sent via certified mail to her address of record, but was returned to Arizona Post unclaimed. An additional address was located and certified mail was sent to that address and left with an individual on July 28, 2022. Compliance Specialist Blanco attempted to contact Recruit Armenta by phone, by the phone number listed on her Arizona Post paperwork, and left a voicemail message. To date, neither Recruit Armenta nor anyone representing her has contacted Arizona Post to request a hearing. To briefly summarize this case, Recruit Armenta applied with the Gila River Police Department in October of 2021. She completed a background packet and listed zero cocaine uses. She later participated in a background interview and did not disclose that she had used cocaine or that she had applied with the Phoenix Police Department. She completed a polygraph questionnaire omitting her cocaine use, and passed the pre-employment polygraph, also without disclosing cocaine use. The Gila River Police Department appointed Recruit Armenta on March 9, 2022. Compliance Specialist Blanco initiated a new hire audit and discovered that Armenta had changed her Arizona Post online personal history form on August 22nd of 2021. Specifically, she changed her cocaine use from zero uses to three, and then the following day changed it from three uses back to zero. She also removed related comments to include that she'd last used cocaine January 1st of 2017, that she snorted it for experimental purposes, and that she stopped using it because she didn't like it. Gila River PD confronted her about these discrepancies, and she admitted to intentionally removing the drug use from her application because she thought it would hurt her chances of becoming a police officer. She also admitted she intentionally failed to disclose that she had applied to the Phoenix Police Department because she was disqualified from that process and she believed it was due to her cocaine disclosure. Recruit Armenta was disqualified from the Gila River hiring process for dishonesty. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board permanently deny Recruit Armenta's peace officer certification. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions from the board for Ms. Nichols? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman,
Jill,
I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and permanently deny peace officer certification to Ms. Armenta.
Thank you, Chief. Having a motion on the table to accept the findings of facts and conclusions of law, do I hear a second?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson, I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Professor. Having been seconded, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Hearing none, appears the ayes have it, and so moved. Thank you. Next up is 2021-173, case on Mr. Candidoity, presented by Mr. Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. This is the first of three final action cases I have for you this morning, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I've been pronouncing his Candiotti. The board voted to initiate proceedings for denial of Candiotti certification on June 15, 2022. Complaint notices were sent to his address of record by regular and certified mail. The certified mailing was returned to Arizona Post, but the one sent by regular mail was not. Post staff also sent a copy of the complaint notice to Candiotti via an email address through which previous communications with him had taken place. To date, neither Candiotti nor anyone representing him have requested a hearing. To briefly summarize his case, in 2021, Mr. Candiotti applied for a position with the Florence Police Department. During the hiring process, he submitted documents or completed and submitted documents, including an Arizona Post personal history form, indicating he had two police contacts and three traffic citations in his life. He provided essentially the same information to a polygraph examiner on August 31st, 2021. After Florence
Insurance PD appointed King Diotti. The agency received records from agencies in Illinois where he used to live, and they found discrepancies regarding the police contacts he reported. Specifically, Florence learned Mr. Candiotti had not divulged 8 traffic citations he received and did not disclose 3 incidents where he faced criminal charges for offenses including resisting arrest and battery. Florence PD questioned Candiotti about one incident from 2005 where he was charged with trespassing in a vehicle, driving without a license, and leaving the scene of an accident. Candiotti had not previously disclosed this incident, and his version of events was contradicted by information in the police report. Florence PD terminated his employment and reported the misconduct to Arizona Post. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board permanently deny Mr. Candiotti peace officer certification, and I'd be glad to answer any questions the board members might have.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and permanently deny peace officer certification to Mr. Candiotti.
Thank you, Professor. Having a motion on the table, do I hear a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Having been seconded, I move it to a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Here's the ayes have it, so move. Next up is 2021-190, Joshua M. Grover, being presented by Mr. Caldwell.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The board initiated proceedings against Grover's peace officer certification on June 15, 2022. Complaint notices were sent to his address of record via certified and regular mail. The certified mailing was delivered on June 28, 2022. The notice sent by regular mail was not returned to Arizona Post, and neither Grover nor anyone representing him requested a hearing. To briefly summarize this case, on July 21st, 2021, a child called the Pinal County Sheriff's Office to report that her father, Grover, was, quote, hitting, unquote, and punching her mother. Deputies responded, and Grover confirmed he had been in a heated argument with his wife. However, he declined to provide further information. His wife said, quote, Grover blocked her path when she tried to leave, pushed her, got on top of her when she fell on a bed, and then pushed her off of the bed. In response, she slapped him. Grover's wife would not allow deputies to enter the house or speak to the child and called 911, and there were no apparent injuries to either party. Grover was arrested and charged with domestic violence-related disorderly conduct, but the charge was dismissed without prejudice by the Pinal County Attorney's Office. Grover's certification was inactive at the time, but he was in the hiring process with the Central Arizona College Police Department, and he reported his arrest to them. In a written statement he provided to his background investigator, he said his wife slapped him during the argument, and he responded by pushing her away. He also claimed his child heard the commotion but did not witness any physical altercation. Arizona Post staff members are not making a recommendation for board action in this case, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that the members might have.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Do any of the members of the board have any questions? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to close this case with no action.
A second.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. A motion for no action, seconded by Ms. Weiss. We'll move it to a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay.
Nay.
We have a single nay. It appears the ayes have it, and it's so moved. Next on the agenda is 2021-202, presented by Mr. Caldwell.
This is another one that's tough to pronounce, Mr. Chairman. I've been saying it as Ucapicio. On March 16, 2022, the board initiated proceedings against Pablo Ucapicio for denial of peace officer certification. Complaint notices were sent to his address via regular and certified mail. The one sent by certified mail was signed for on March 24, 2022. And the one sent by regular mail was not returned to Arizona Post. To date, neither Ucapicio nor anyone representing him have contacted Post or requested a hearing. This case was previously presented for final action during the June 2022 meeting, and direction from the board at that time was to table the matter until the criminal case was completed. This criminal case has concluded, and I briefly summarize the incident for you now. On October 1st, 2021, Eloy PD officers met with Eucapicio's girlfriend, who reported he had been abusing her over the course of their three-year relationship. Officers noted multiple bruises on her chest and both arms, and they described the female as being visibly upset and distraught. She reported that during an argument on September 23rd, 2021, Eucapicio struck her in the face, chest, and legs with his fists. She also stated he physically assaulted her on both September 27th and September 28, 2021. The two previously worked together at a correctional facility, and she said she frequently called out sick from work due to physical injuries caused by Eucapicio. During an interview, Eucapicio denied assaulting his girlfriend, but did admit the two had been arguing. He was arrested and charged with domestic violence-related disorderly conduct and assault, but his charges were dismissed after he completed an eight-week anger management program. He actually completed the program in August of this year. Salt River PD terminated Eucapicio, and no internal investigation was conducted. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board permanently denies peace officer certification, and I'd be glad to answer any questions that the board members might have.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. Any questions from the board?
I just had a question. The class that he completed, was that in lieu of a conviction, or were there terms with that?
My understanding was that of the situation is that the town prosecutor reached an informal agreement with his attorney that if he completed this anger management or the counseling, that they would dismiss the charges. So there's no sort of signed agreement or anything like that. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes, thanks.
Any additional questions from the board? Hearing none, I will table it for a motion.
Mr. Chair, Matt Figueroa, I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and deny peace officer certification for Mr. Picchio.
Mr. Chairman, Mark Brechtel, I believe there's an amended motion that was submitted that clarifies the permanent denial, which would be language you would want to add to the motion, if that's where how the board wants to proceed.
So if I understand you correctly, the amended motion for the Eucapicio case that we just heard would add
permanent denial.
That's correct. That was just an oversight on administration side when we were preparing these for you. We ought to have added the word permanently in that proposed motion.
All right. I will have the commander restate his motion.
I move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and permanently deny peace officer certification for Mr. Eucapicio.
Thank you, Commander. Having a motion on the floor, do I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you, Chief. That second and the motion is for permanent denial of certification of Mr. Eucapicio. I'll move it to a vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Choose the ayes have it. So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Caldwell. We will move to new cases. First up on new cases is 2022-028 on Jesse Ranzanu, presented by Deputy Director Henry. Thank you,
sir. Good
morning,
Mr. Chairman, members of the board. A couple of things, and the reason I'm presenting this case, this is a little bit convoluted, and so what we alluded to, and I don't want to go into a whole preamble, but we're doing cases a little bit differently in fairness to the board, in fairness to Arizona Post, in fairness to the officers as well as our agencies. A lot of times we get stale cases or information that is sent to us and we have questions, and just as the director was alluding to. And so as we start asking more questions, hopefully it becomes more relevant to the board and what you're hearing. So with this, I would just like to acknowledge Robin McIntyre. He pretty much wrote this investigation, did the legwork on this, and I just get the privilege of presenting his work. So this case is a use of force case. There is a video that you're going to be watching. One of the things, though, about this, when we started reading through this, it sounded a little bit more like a last chance agreement. And for those that have agencies that permit those, it's typically with an officer that has discipline on top of discipline. It doesn't have to be necessarily in the same bucket. It could be something as a DUI. It could be domestic violence. But it's just that type of discipline. So the genesis, like I said, of this case is a use of force incident. But when it came over to us, there was something of note that was written by the lieutenant who conducted and made the recommendations. Of note, it's throughout Officer Randall's tenure, he has numerous documented issues, including repeatedly being late for a shift, disobeying direct orders, having a poor attitude, and not conducting thorough investigations. These incidents are memorialized in Officer Randall's employee logs from November 17th to present. The history of Officer Randall's conduct has demonstrated a lack of proper decision-making, specifically as multiple violations of department policy regarding driving, recently an out-of-policy pursuit, and presently with sustained use of force allegation. So I'm going to try to stick through this chronologically, so we're going to go back a little bit. Again, what's typically done here is we figure out if this were a fish, we cut off the head, the tail, and what's the meat of the investigation. Because this is expands beyond just the use of force, I'm going to go a little bit through, and this takes us back to his academy days in 2017. One of the things Mr. Randall, or Officer Randall at the time, went through an open enrollment academy. It was through the Glendale Community College. And so although we have no jurisdiction over those open enrollees, we do an audit, a new hire audit on those people. The reason for that, we just want to make sure we don't have any gang members, terrorists, anything like that coming through the system. And so, again, in this particular case, Kathy Hawes was the compliance specialist back in 2017. Officer Randall's paperwork came through, and she noted on her Arizona Post audit that the director at the time, Penny Babb, had written that, hey, you ought to think about not coming to the academy here at Glendale Community College because of your driving record. You have too many driving points, and nobody will pick you up. Nonetheless, Mr. or Officer Randall at the time decided to stick with it. And so as he went through the academy, it's a two-semester deal. His first semester, he was placed on probation. And he was placed on probation basically because of his attitude, multiple incidents of immaturity. And then he was an unsafe driver coming in and out of the parking lot. The second semester, he improved significantly. And that helped him propel him. And at the end, in November of 2017, he graduated and was successfully hired at that time by the Wickenburg Police Department. Of note, he ended up in that duration, having some significant cases, the first of which was 0320, and that was in the summer of 2020. He received a letter of reprimand, and it was speeding incidents, 53 miles per hour to 35. He had four other incidents. Three of those were in his personal vehicle. He resided in the city of Surprise, and they would catch him coming home and back. And so it was Surprise that notified Wickenburg police. And so again, that's what he got the letter of reprimand for. Case 520, it was near the end of the summer of 2020, he received a 24-hour suspension. At that point in time, he was driving approximately 80 miles per hour at a 65 mile per hour on the US 60, and he struck and killed a cow. He was on cruise control during that time. Following that, it was early fall of 2020, it was case 720. He was speeding 79 miles per hour in a 65 and 69 in a 45, respectively, and the investigation for that reason was outsourced to the Surprise Police Department for the fairness of Wickenburg. He received an 80-hour suspension at that time. Near the end of summer of 2021, there was yet another case, 4-21. It was an unauthorized pursuit. It was traffic only. That's what initiated the pursuit of an ATV. The suspect was known, and for many of us, that means that we go ahead and let the person go based on what type of crime. It was traffic only. On this, there was an ATV. The passenger on it was a female that was 7 months pregnant. During the pursuit, she was either ejected or jumped off, but was seriously hurt. Officer Randall continued to pursue the vehicle and collided with the ATV, causing damage to his police vehicle as well as the ATV. That discipline was held at the time. About a month later, on this current investigation, this is Officer Randall's last investigation with the department, which occurred on October 22nd of 2021. He was placed on administrative leave for alleged excessive force and unreasonable use of force. Dale, can you play that video for us?
Get on the ground, do it now. Get on the ground, do it now. I'm going to put you on the ground.
So what you saw, the prisoner there is going to be, we'll just use his first name, Michael. Michael actually was looking for his girlfriend earlier that day in Wickenburg, ended up going to a residence and going inside of the residence. Now the residence in there, he was looking for his girlfriend. The residents say that no, the door was locked. There was some damage done to the lock. Again, he wasn't charged with that, or he was charged with it initially. That was later dropped. But by the time Officer ran out, he was the investigating officer. He went over to the residence. Obviously, Michael was gone, so there was no contact. Dispatch cleared Officer ran out and said, hey, your suspect in this particular unwanted person call is now over at the town hall of Wickenburg. So Officer ran out, responds there with his sergeant, Lajeunesse. And so as they go over, they start investigating. They come to the conclusion there is probable cause for an arrest. At that point in time, the sergeant recognizes this person. He's in Wickenburg quite a bit. He also is a person that causes injury to himself. And so they go ahead and take him into custody. There's really no, the taking into custody without incident is probably the best way to describe it. However, once he's in custody and he starts knowing, hey, this is what's going to happen, you're going to go to jail, and because of some of the potential crimes, this could be a burglary, maybe you'll have to go down to Maricopa County and be booked. And it's just not a sight and release. At that point in time, Michael becomes a little bit more upset. There's some jawing at the car when Officer Ransell loads him, and based on that time, he has to say, look, you're going to get tased if you don't get in the car. So a little bit of that passive resisting. He does get into the car, certainly not all the way. At some point in time, Officer Ransell opens the other side of the car door, pulls on his sweatshirt, pulls him inside of the vehicle. They drive a short time later, and they actually go to their facility, the Wickenburg Jail. During that intake process, or on the ride over, Michael starts beating his head against the partition. So he's seated in the back, there's a glass partition, and starts hitting the car at least 3 to 5 times, enough that Officer Ransell says, it's shaking the car, and he tells him to knock it off. He reports that to the sergeant, and again, they're somewhat used to Michael's behavior. Gets him outside, gets him through, gets him into a cell at that point in time, removes the cuffs. That's what you were seeing, the body cam of Officer Ransell, and the other person was going to be the sergeant that helped arrest. At some point in time, they secure the weapons. They're going to do the paperwork in order to book Michael. Now Michael is standing up, and again, he's asking certain things. Do I have to go to jail? Do I have to go to Maricopa County? Again, once they confirm that, yes, you are going to be jailed, this is what's going to happen. He starts hitting his head again, now up against the door of the cell. The sergeant sees us and starts right away, get down. He tells Michael to get down several times. Michael ends up compliant after the fifth time. Gets on the floor. Now Officer Randall, again, whose body camera is on, starts coming over to aid and grabs a pair of the cuffs to restrain his legs. So the leg restraints are placed on there by Officer Randall, and now the sergeant is standing above the prisoner, Michael, and he's got his regular handcuffs ready to cuff his hands up. And basically what they're going to do is put a belt on, so this prisoner can no longer, Michael can no longer bang himself or stand in a situation. So Officer Randall leaves the cell area before the prisoner is restrained with the handcuffs. At some point in time, as he's looking through the doors, and that's what he's doing in the beginning, it is Michael who starts to stamp. The sergeant has his cuffs off. At that point in time, the sergeant knows that, hey, he's trying to keep this guy down. He doesn't want him to get the handcuffs, so he throws his handcuffs into the corner of the cell. Again, Michael is standing. The sergeant's, you know, 5'10", 5'11", slight build. The subject here, Michael, is going to be 6'3", 210, probably a little lighter than that, just by looking at it. Officer Randall, 6'2", though, and 280 pounds. And so he comes to the aid because he starts hearing the sergeant's voice get a little bit more intense. At that point in time, as Officer Randall runs in, he unholsters his taser. Michael has never stood up. He's on his knees at that point in time. And the sergeant just yells as he backs away, tase him. And so in about the period of 4 seconds, Officer Randall tases him, not only with one cartridge, but the second. So both of them are not effective. Just because of the spread or because of the clothing, it just doesn't give that neuromuscular difference in there, and it doesn't seem to disrupt or freeze. But you can tell he's moving around, he's writing. This is probably where a little bit of, you know, what criminal investigations, and I'll get to that in a minute, what happens next? Is it active? Is it aggravated? Certainly to the point, and I think everybody in that particular cell, minus Michael, will say, hey, this is not a deadly force situation. What happens when the taser is ineffective is Michael is still on the ground. At that point in time, Officer Randall hovers above him, and he is striking the prisoner, Michael, at least three times. One of those with the taser, sort of a hammer strike. One of the tasers hits him actually in the shoulder, and the other two strike him directly on top of the head. As a result, his head, he suffers injuries, and he's got two of them. One's going to be a 1-centimeter cut, and the other is a 3-centimeter cut. Later on, they transport him to the hospital, and he's got to get 3 staples in the head. He also has an orbital injury, more than likely caused by him placing his face, striking it in the back of the police car or inside of that jail. Nonetheless, they get him, they call fire, and they get that transported. Right away, they freeze the scene. They get everybody notified. At some point in time, Officer Randall, after watching the body cam, they come out the department and say, this is a bad use of force. They actually place Officer Randall on leave, and they question the sergeant as well. An administrative investigation gets started, but they also want a criminal investigation just to make sure, hey, is there any assault against Michael? Glendale Police at that point in time comes in. They get their case investigator, and that case investigator, after everything that he sees, no, we don't see anything, and this is in consultation with Maricopa County Attorney's Office. So they do not file any charges. They do a departmental report based on this, and again, decide not to file anything based on the information provided. As the administrative investigation starts to you have Officer Randall basically saying, I was trained this way. Everything that I did here, I was trained. Wickenburg takes exception to that, and they are saying nobody has ever trained you to use an impact weapon to the back of somebody's head. And so at this point in time, Randall says, okay, well, you guys didn't do it in the officer training, but this is how I was trained in the basic academy over at Glendale Community College. And this is how I was trained. His former career was a jailer over at Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. So So he was a detention officer. He said, I was trained this way in 2012, that anything I use in my hand, it becomes an extension. So again, this is where we are doing things a little bit differently. So we went ahead and we went out and pulled his records, and that's how I got the material from his academy. There is nothing, tasers aren't taught in the academy. That is something because not all agencies have tasers. And so that is something that was not taught in the curriculum specifically back in 2017 in the 585. Going back and speaking to jail personnel at MCSO, so we did find the records when he was trained. Again, there's nothing in those records that indicate that he was trained that anything in your hand becomes an extension of your hand. So again, just talking to the people, we went a step further. So the chain of command over there, that particular sergeant that helped provide that instruction over at MCSO, we showed him the video, everything else. Again, with hindsight being 2020, he just said, no, that would not be appropriate. That would not be something that we taught. Again, I think there's some exceptions when everything becomes no longer a fair fight. If it is that violent attack where you are losing, if it's life or death, you will have instructors from time to time saying, look, we're not going to tell you, you can't hit somebody in the groin, you can't scratch, you can't bite someone, you can't do anything of that. But clearly in this specific situation, these weren't those situations. That's what his department ended up saying. That's what the Maricopa County, that is what our basic curriculum says as far as impact weapons inside of the academy. Again, there's several types of resistance. One of the things I ended up doing just reviewing this for myself is you've got an active resistance. It's going to be physical actions that attempt to prevent an officer's control but do not involve attempts to harm the officer. And based on this definition, solely running officers do not constitute active resistance. And then you have active aggression. Again, this is a physical action of assault. And so by that video, it's very hard to tell, and nobody wants to put themselves ever in that situation of second-guessing officers, but that's what the dilemma was. I can tell you, initially, they charged Michael for the ag assault against a police officer resisting arrest, also the criminal trespass, and the only charge that came out was actually the trespass. The department took a look at everything, and it does not meet the criteria of that. So they pulled the other charges. Michael, I think, still has an outstanding bench warrant possibly for that criminal trespass, but he wasn't charged for any of those other indications. So some of the things, like I said, that we're doing a little bit differently is we're actually going out and interviewing some of the staff members. So again, nobody could corroborate what the officer ended up saying, hey, I was taught this. And so again, we do meet with officers now as well. I'm not gonna, you know, that conversation is confidential. We met with the employment lawyer as well. So one of the things that happened afterwards, after that specific incident meeting and saying, hey, this is how the board's going to proceed, one of the things that occurred is we ended up getting an anonymous complaint right after a meeting with Officer Ranzau. That complaint was on a lieutenant out of Wickenburg. And so although the caller wanted to remain anonymous, his name came up as Officer Ranzau. And so wanting to make a complaint over something, an allegation in 2005. So those are, again, some of the maturity issues and some of the things that we're still seeing just when we go through these cases. And so I'm hoping that this helps you all decide. Again, to be fair to the Officer Ranzau, he did have four, what I refer to as accommodations. In 2018, he had two life-saving awards. Also in 2018, he shot as an expert, and then in 2020, he shot as an expert as well. So, again, we're trying to give you a little bit more information just on the officers and how it reached this decision and the termination. And with that, Arizona Post is recommending that you initiate on this case, but I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Henry. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Ranzau's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Do I have a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Sure.
Having a second, we'll move it to a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed, signify by saying nay. Hearing none, appears the ayes have it, and so moved. Thank you. Okay, we will move on to case number two, which is listed as number three because we had a change in the order. It's 2022-131, Gable Bardot, presented by Mr. DeLaurentie. Good day, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm Mike Delton with your compliance unit. My first case involves former Flagstaff police recruit Gable Boudreaux, I think is how you pronounce it. On July 18th, 2022, the first day of the NARDA Class 53, recruit training officer, or RTO, Dalton, was notified that recruit Gable Boudreaux had not yet completed two administrative tasks necessary to participate in the academy. The tasks were supposed to be completed prior to the start of the academy, which was July 18th. Boudreaux did not send his AccuPlacer test score to the academy administration and did not send a required form to the uniform store. Academy staff later focused their questions on the uniform store component, as the AccuPlacer test score was to be sent directly to the academy and they knew they had not received it. RTO Dalton questioned Boudreaux about the incomplete tasks, to which he stated he already sent his test scores and submitted his uniform store to the uniform store. When asked if he was sure he sent the request to the uniform store, Boudreaux stated he was 100% confident and submitted the form via email. In an attempt to confirm Boudreaux's story, RTO Dalton asked him again multiple times, to which he consistently stated he was sure he sent the request. RTO Dalton subsequently contacted the uniform store and confirmed that they had not yet received the request from Boudreaux. The following day, RTO Dalton met with Boudreaux and Flagstaff Police Department Lieutenant C. Boudreaux was asked again if he submitted the request to the uniform store prior to the start of the academy, to which he stated he did. Boudreaux was provided access to his personal phone and asked to show the sent email to the uniform store. He presented an email sent to the uniform store, but it was sent after he first spoke with RTO Dalton and before the conversation between RTO Dalton, Lieutenant C, and Boudreaux. RTO Dalton asked Boudreaux about sending the email after their initial conversation, and Boudreaux said he sent the first email with the form attached back on July 5th, 2022. Boudreaux was then asked to display that email. However, after Boudreaux searched his emails for several minutes, he was unable to locate it. Boudreaux was questioned further, and he eventually admitted he never sent the email prior to the arrival at the academy. It was determined that Boudreaux was untruthful and was dismissed from the academy and terminated by the Flagstaff PD. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings, and I am happy to answer any of your questions.
Sir, any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion, and we'll note for the record that Chief Vasquez has left the room.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to initiate proceedings to deny peace officer certification to Mr. Bordeaux.
Thank you, Professor. Do I hear a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you. Having a motion and a second, we'll move it to a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Hearing none, appears the ayes have it, so moved. We will move on to the next case, which is 2022-148. We'll note for the record that Chief Vasquez has returned to the room. Felton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This case involves current Phoenix police officer Jason Holloman. On July 3rd, 2021, approximately 9:58 p.m., the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, or MCSO, deputies responded to the call for service of a male slumped over behind the steering wheel of a vehicle. Upon arrival, MCSO Deputy Wallace found off-duty Phoenix police officer Jason Holloman in the driver's seat of a running vehicle on a residential street in Waddell, Arizona. Deputy Wallace could see Officer Holloman with an open alcohol container in his hand, and he had to be awakened by the deputy. During contact with Officer Holloman, Deputy Wallace saw him display signs and symptoms consistent with alcohol impairment. Officer Holloman admitted to drinking alcohol and failed standard field sobriety tests Officer Holloman submitted to a preliminary breath test at the scene, which registered a blood alcohol concentration, or BAC, of 0.141. Officer Holloman was subsequently arrested for suspicion of driving under the influence or actual physical control, DUI, and later refused to consent to a blood or a breath test as required by law. Consequently, the deputies authored a search warrant to obtain Officer Holloman's BAC level. Officer Holloman submitted to the breath test at the MCSO station, which registered a 0.162 BAC. During his DUI processing, Officer Holloman became aggressive and belligerent with deputies, forcing the deputies to take him to the ground, handcuff him, and place him in a holding cell. We do have a body-worn camera footage of this incident, and Dale, would you please play that video? Officer Holloman with an offense related to that physical confrontation you just witnessed. Later, the results of the blood test indicated a BAC of 0.189. The DUI case was not submitted by the Maricopa County Attorney's Office before the statute of limitations expired and the case was dismissed. Officer Holloman received a 120-hour suspension from the Phoenix Police Department and remains appointed as an officer with that agency. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings, and I am happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will open it for a vote.
Mr. Chairman, Chief Oskus, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Holloman's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Chief. Is there a second?
Jamie Kelly, second.
Ms. Kelly. I'm having a motion on the floor and a second to move this to proceedings. I will take a vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Hearing none, appears the ayes have it. It is so moved. Thank you. We will move to the next case, 2022-132. Sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself and rest.
Understood. Thank you. For the record, Commander Figueroa has recused himself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My last case involves former Coconino County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Robert Smith. On May 31st, 2022, Coconino County Sheriff's Office, or CCSO Sergeant Robert Smith, was involved in a minor vehicle collision with a parked car while driving a CCSO patrol vehicle on private property at a shopping center parking lot in Flagstaff. Sergeant Smith violated CCO policies by failing to notify a supervisor in a timely manner and not requesting an officer from the Flagstaff Police Department be dispatched to assume the collision investigation. On June 1st, 2022, Sergeant Smith told the CCSO commander and the chief deputy he had been involved in a minor private property accident the day prior. Sergeant Smith said he had checked his MDC to ascertain whether or not there were any Flagstaff PD units available to respond to his collision. This was later found to be untrue. Sergeant Smith did not check his MDC, and in fact, it had not turned it on that day. Sergeant Smith did notify the lieutenant, who is his direct supervisor, or did not notify him until June 3rd in an email. On June 7th, Sergeant Smith made a false statement to his supervisor when he told him he had checked with the FPD or Flagstaff PD dispatch to determine if they were too busy to respond. CCSO determined between June 1st and June 7th of 2022, Sergeant Smith was untruthful when he provided inconsistent statements to a lieutenant commander and deputy chief as to why he did not request a Flagstaff PD officer respond to assume the investigation for supervision. On July 15th of 2022, Sergeant Smith was terminated from his appointment with CCSO. He is currently in the process of appealing his termination, and based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Delton. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Smith, peace officer certification.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Anyone second?
Mr. Chairman, I'll second.
Thank you. I have a motion and a second to initiate proceedings. I will move it to a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Hearing none, the ayes have it. So moved. We move on to our next case, 2021-037, presented by Ms. Heckel.
Mr. Chairman, I recuse myself from any voting or discussion.
Understood. Chief Vasquez, known for the record, has recused himself. Commander Figueroa remains out of the room.
The second floor is yours. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, Arlene Heckel, one of your compliance specialists. Andre Patino is currently employed by the Eloy Police Department and has been since July of 2008. On July 9th, 2020, Officer Patino was a sergeant working as the on-duty supervisor. This was during the time of the COVID pandemic, and many procedures as well as internal policies and procedures were affected. Eloy Police Department had implemented a policy that any offender of a misdemeanor violation would be cited and released and not taken to their police facility. On July 9th, 2020, an off-duty employee of the Eloy Police Department received information that a subject had just damaged property inside the Eloy family laundry business. Officer Stenson was assigned to the call, and Sergeant Patino responded to assist. It was determined the suspect, Javier, was at his home, and the officers contacted him there. Officer Stenson believed he would cite and release Javier due to the COVID protocols until Sergeant Patino told him to arrest him. Officer Stenson arrested Javier and took him to the Eloy Police Department so he could finish his paperwork prior to transporting him to the Pinal County Sheriff's Office for booking. Officer Stenson did not remove Javier's personal property prior to placing him into the holding cell at 1827 hours. The holding cells have cameras inside and are monitored by dispatchers. At 1917 hours, the dispatchers requested someone check on Javier because he was covering the camera. Corporal Childress responded to the cell and removed a styrofoam cup. When Corporal Childress left the cell, Javier immediately covered the camera again with the cup. Corporal Childress returned to the cell, and Javier made a vague comment to the effect of, like I'm suicidal. Nothing else was said by either Javier or Corporal Childress. Corporal Childress removed the cup from the cell. Corporal Childress returned to the dispatch area, and the dispatchers and Sergeant Patino were all present. Corporal Childress advised Sergeant Patino that Officer Stenson had not removed Javier's personal property, and that Sergeant Patino made the comment, "Oh, that's just Vinny," meaning Officer Stenson did not do his job. Corporal Childress told the dispatchers about the vague suicide comment, but it could not be determined if Sergeant Patino heard it or not. In the following 10 minutes, Javier covered the camera in the holding cell three times with his hat and then removed it. At 1939 hours, Javier covered the camera and left it covered. At 2056 hours, Officer Stenson went back to the holding cell and found Javier deceased by hanging. There was 1 hour and 17 minutes where the camera was covered in the cell and no one checked on Javier. An internal investigation was completed, and on February 3rd, 2021, Sergeant Patino was terminated by the Eloy Police Department for violating numerous department policies, including untruthfulness during the administrative investigation. On April 15th, 2021, Sergeant Patino filed an appeal with the City of Eloy and a settlement was reached that included Sergeant Patino getting his job back, that he would be demoted to officer, and he was required to provide a written explanation of his inconsistent statements in regard to the administrative investigation that were originally deemed dishonest. On May 3, 2021, after reading Sergeant Patino's explanations and in upholding the settlement terms, Sergeant Patino was reinstated as an officer due to the sustained allegations of 4 policy violations. Arizona Post staff believes Officer Patino's conduct constitutes malfeasance for failing to follow the policies to cite and release and failing to ensure the property was removed from Javier prior to being placed in the detention. This malfeasance contributed to the in-custody death of Javier. Based on the facts of this case, Arizona Post is not making any recommendations. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Heckel. Any questions for Ms. Heckel? Hearing none, I will move this for a vote.
Mr. Chairman, I recommend we initiate proceedings on this case.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We have a motion to initiate proceedings. It's been seconded. I'll move it to a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, signify by saying nay.
Nay.
We have one nay. Here's the ayes have it, and it's so moved. We'll take a roll call. Mr. Figueroa is the nay. Okay, we'll move on to our next case, 2022-135. Mr. Martinez presenting.
Good morning, Chairman and Board members. I'm Darren Martinez, one of your compliance specialists. I'm here to present case 2022-135 involving former Hopi Resource Enforcement Services Officer Evan Silas. On June 7, 2022, while off-duty, Officer Silas was at his mother's residence in the village of Palaca, Arizona. Officer Silas and his brother, Chris, were outside the residence drinking alcohol and having a conversation. The conversation became a verbal argument and eventually escalated into a physical altercation after Officer Silas pushed Chris. Officer Silas pushed, hit, and knocked Chris to the ground multiple times during the fight. Chris attempted to get away from Officer Silas, but Officer Silas continued to be physical. At one point, Chris found a metal baseball bat in the front yard and informed Officer Silas that if he continued to hit and throw him to the ground, he would hit Officer Silas with the baseball bat. Officer Silas continued to push and be aggressive, so Chris hit Officer Silas with the bat 2 times, once in the head and the other on the left side of his rib cage. Chris then left the scene on foot, and the police were called. Officer Silas's 2 daughters, niece, nephew, and mother, were inside the house during the incident. The daughters were interviewed but had little information for investigators since they were inside and did not witness the entire incident. The niece, nephew, and mother were not interviewed. Officer Silas was charged with violating Hopi Tribal Code Section 3.13.2, Disorderly Conduct, and 3.15.4, Intoxication. On June 14, 2022, Officer Silas was placed on administrative leave pending an internal investigation. On July 11, 2022, the investigation concluded that Officer Silas violated 3 of the Hopi Resource Enforcement Service's general orders regarding the unprofessional conduct of an employee and recommended his termination. On July 15, 2022, Officer Silas resigned from the Hopi Resource Enforcement Services. The disorderly conduct and intoxication charges against Officer Silas are still pending review from the prosecuting authority. Officer Silas's brother, Chris, has domestic violence charges pending review as well. Based on the facts of this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will open it up for a motion.
Jamie Kelly, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Silas Peace Officer Certification.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Is there a second?
Chairman Kevin Robinson, I'll second the motion.
Thank you for professor. Having a motion to initiate proceedings and a second, I'll move it to a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, signify by saying nay. Hearing none, the ayes have it. So moved. Thank you, sir. We will move on to case number 2021-126, presented by Mr. Shea.
Well, I know you're all excited to see me because I'm going last, so. I plan to say good morning, but good afternoon. My name is Tim Shea. I'll be presenting two cases this afternoon. One involves DLLC Deputy Director Michael Rosenberg, and the other involves Scottsdale Commander Bruce Cioli. As you're aware from your overviews, these two cases overlap in that they involve Rosenberger and Cioli's communications about a related sex crimes investigation. In order to avoid repetition, I'll present Rosenberger first, and after the board has had a chance to rule, I will present Cioli. For the sake of brevity, I'll do my best not to repeat information in the Cioli case that was already presented in the Rosenberger case. The information being presented for these two cases was gathered from a Scottsdale PD criminal investigation, two DPS IA investigations, a Scottsdale PD IA investigation, and an Arizona Post interview with the Scottsdale PD detective. Reference Michael Rosenberger. During October 2020, DLLC Deputy Director Michael Rosenberger supervised an operation involving undercover activities at a Scottsdale topless club. The following day, a dancer reported criminal sexual contact by one of the undercover officers during the operation. Scottsdale PD responded and began a criminal investigation. The day after the criminal report, the case was assigned to a Scottsdale detective, and the investigations commander, Bruce Cioli, was made aware of the allegations against the DLLC detective. At about the same time, Rosenberger was becoming aware of the allegations against his detective. And knowing Cioli was the investigations commander at Scottsdale, Rosenberger contacted Cioli for additional information. Between October 26, 2020 and January 2021, Rosenberger and Cioli had numerous conversations about the criminal investigation. While the initial contacts were in order to allow DLLC to make staffing decisions about the suspect detective, the conversations went beyond administrative contents. Beginning with the first conversation, information known only to the Scottsdale criminal investigators was discussed. Rosenberger told Cioli the complaint was in retaliation for suspending the club's liquor license, and he didn't believe the detective had done anything wrong. In the first days of the criminal investigation, Scottsdale PD focused on verbiage written by the suspect detective in the suspension order on the night of the undercover operation. Scottsdale was specifically focused on language which indicated that the detective had participated in proactive sexual touching of the dancer, which would be criminal in nature. The suspect detective wrote his incident report about the undercover operation after he was aware of the Scottsdale criminal investigation. He described his interaction with the topless dancer in a manner consistent with the language he wrote in the suspension order, continuing to use the verbiage which seemed to indicate proactive sexual contact. After reviewing the detective's draft, Rosenberger returned the draft report to the detective and explained to him that Scottsdale was focused on this verbiage and that his use of those particular words was creating, quote, consternation. The information Rosenberger provided the detective was known only to the Scottsdale investigators, and the detective used this information to substantially change his report. The detective changed his report from one which indicated proactive touching of the dancer to one which provided a detailed account of defensive actions on his part, which he said were necessary to avoid attempts at sexual contact by the topless dancer. Rosenberger then reviewed and approved this version and provided it to Cioli for inclusion in the criminal investigation. The detective later told DPS IA investigators that Rosenberger advised him he should not speak with Scottsdale detectives as they would twist his words, and that he would not have made any changes to his incident report except at the direction of Rosenberger. The assigned Scottsdale PD detective told Arizona Post she had no idea there was so much conversation happening between Rosenberger and Cioli, and she believed it was inappropriate and unnecessary. She explained case-related information should not be given to a suspect, and she believed this transfer of information, quote, definitely impacted the investigation in totality. Shortly after the Scottsdale criminal investigation began, DLLC requested DPS Internal Affairs conduct an internal investigation into the allegations against the detective. Rosenberger was aware of this internal investigation and was admonished during a witness interview on December 11, 2020. But even after this admonishment, discussed information in the case with the suspect detective and other witnesses. Specifically, on January 6, 2021, Rosenberger hosted an online meeting with numerous staff at DLLC, including the suspect detective, and said the investigation was over and the detective had been cleared of any wrongdoing. He then went on to discuss several aspects of the investigation. However, the DPSIA investigation was still ongoing, interviews were still occurring, and Rosenberger eventually became the focus of an additional related DPSIA investigation. The DPSIA investigation of Rosenberger's actions sustained willful disobedience for violating the admonition, and Rosenberger resigned prior to the IA investigation being finalized. Based upon the facts presented in this case, staff recommends the board initiate proceedings. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, sir. Are there any questions for Mr. Shea? Case from the board? Hearing none, I will open it up for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson. I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Rosenberg's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Professor. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, Chief Oskis, I second.
Thank you, Chief. Having a motion to initiate proceedings, it's been seconded. I'll move it to a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Hearing none, the ayes have it, and so moved. We will move
Mr.
to.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, Mr. Johnson recused himself in this case and also from the next case.
Thank you. We'll ensure the records reflect so. All right, we will move to the next case, 2022-1. Mr. Shea.
All right, with the information I presented previously in mind, we'll move to Bruce Cioli. Cioli was the investigations division commander at Scottsdale when the criminal investigation began, and the assigned detective was under his command. The day Cioli was informed of the allegations against the detective, he notified his assistant chief, who instructed him to contact Rosenberger and inform him of the ongoing criminal investigation involving his detective. During Cioli and Rosenberger's first telephone conversation, Cioli advised him the allegations against the detective, as well as the fact that the report doesn't look good. He provided specific language used in the detective's suspension order and said that it indicated the detective had proactively touched the topless dancer. Over the course of the next several weeks, Cioli provided information to Rosenberger which was known only to Scottsdale criminal investigators. Some of what Cioli told Rosenberger included victim statements, the detective's own writing has indicated proactive touching of the dancer, the fact that there were no video recordings of the incident in the topless club, as well as the specific charge, the specific criminal charge, that Scottsdale detectives were considering. The information Cioli provided to Rosenberger eventually was provided to the DLLC detective under criminal investigation by Scottsdale PD, and the detective used this information to substantially change his incident report. Scottsdale case agent was interviewed by Arizona Post, and she said she was not aware so much information had been given to DLLC and ultimately to the suspect detective. She believes this transfer of specific case-related investigative material definitely impacted the investigation in its totality. Cioli was interviewed as a witness in the DPSIA investigation and later became the focus of a Scottsdale IA investigation. He told investigators he was acting in the role of a liaison in his conversations with Rosenberger, and he denied he provided more information to Rosenberger than was customary in similar circumstances. There's no evidence to indicate Cioli knew Rosenberger was providing this information to the suspect detective. The Scottsdale IA investigation sustained poor decision-making by Cioli, and he received a letter of counseling. Based upon the facts of this case, staff recommends that the board initiate proceedings. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from the board? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to initiate proceedings against Mr. Cioli's peace officer certification.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, Kevin Robinson, I'll second the motion.
Thank you, Professor. Having a motion to initiate proceedings and a second, I'll move it to a vote. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, please signify by saying nay. Hearing none, the ayes have it, and so moved. Thank you, sir. Okay, that concludes the cases for this meeting. We will move to draft future agenda items.
Nothing at this time, but I think we're also going to give any member of the public who wanted to speak an opportunity.
We certainly were as soon as you were done.
Oh, gotcha. I'm getting ahead of myself, sir. Sorry.
Good. We will open the floor to members of the public. If anybody would like to address the board, now will be your time. I hear no requests from the public to address the board. With that, we will entertain a motion to adjourn today's meeting.
Move.
All right. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.